Just go solo.
This is Solo Travel Talk. Your solo travel advisor is Astrid Clements.
Ah, the open road. If you feel the call of the highways, byways, and interstates, this episode of Solo Travel Talk is for you. I'm producer Catherine O'Brien. Road trips are a special kind of journey and might be a perfect venture for the solo traveler. So load up the trunk, fill the tank, and hit play on your favorite podcast as you experience road tripping with Astrid. It strikes me that one of the major ways road trips are different than other travel is that the journey really is the travel experience, as opposed to the focus being on the destination.
Solo road trips are completely different than your normal point A to point B destination type of trips. You know, from really the start to the finish of a road trip, it has some kind of organic evolution to it. From the minute you leave your home and you begin to drive, you start living in the moment. What happens is basically you are seeing all kinds of things visually going on, whether, you know, it's road signs to places where you need to stop and gas up, or, you know, beautiful scenery, whatever you're seeing. But then also your mind is going through your own personal thoughts. So you will be thinking about all kinds of different things, whether what you forgot to do or say the last time you were with somebody who was important to you. It's amazing when you are on the road, in motion, what you start thinking about. And I have thought about this quite a few times. I don't know, maybe it's the motion or being in motion, that energy or whatever it is stimulates you to think about things and think about them in a even a deeper way than you would if you just sat down at home and said, well, I'm going to think about this, or, oh, I shouldn't have done that. And then, you know, I don't know. There's something about, you know, you've got all this going on that you're seeing on the outside, and then you have this going on what's on the inside. So that in itself makes a road trip, I think, totally different than a normal type of vacation where you, you know, have to go to the airport, go through the security, all the hassle of all of that. And really what it does is it gives you some real quality me time. You know, that's what I think is the number one thing that I would really say that a road trip does if you do this solo. I mean, granted, if you do it with your significant other or your family, it'll be fun too, and there'll be some of what I just talked to about it. But if it's a purely solo road trip, this is what you're going to experience.
Why are road trips a good choice for the solo traveler, and really what can the solo traveler expect?
Okay. First of all, the solo traveler is usually somebody who is highly independent and confident. You know, someone who's curious, adventurous, you know, definitely wants to call their own shots, reflective thinker, they observe a lot, and they can be happy alone. So on road trips or road trip types of solo vacations are a great fit, I think, for the solo traveler, because it fits or it's in sync with their character and their personality. A lot of people, you know, I think, don't think along these lines in terms of taking this kind of trip, but it really is a real good fit for somebody who likes to travel solo. So that's one way, you know, that I guess is the answer to my question. But, you know, here again, you can create your own itinerary. You can do everything you want to. You can go at your own pace. You can get up when you want to. You can eat where you want to. I mean, you do not have to compromise with anybody to do anything. And so I think that that's quite enjoyable if you want to travel somewhere where you really want to dig down, or you just want to be with yourself and do something totally by yourself. And it's a good way to do it because you are doing things during the day. You're not just by yourself, like listening to music or whatever. There's more to it. So great. And I really kind of, I guess one of the ways that I would describe this, it's a kind of a type of travel therapy. You kind of hit the reset button when you do this. You know, after you go through the trip, I know every solo driving trip that I've ever taken, when I come back, I just feel refreshed, reinvigorated, positive. And I don't know if it's strictly the motion of it, even though, you know, there some of it is not fun, it can get monotonous, etc. But there is some kind of therapeutic, I think, essence to road trips, and especially to solo road trips, if you're geared to this. Some people would not want to do that, but it is not something that a solo traveler couldn't do or shouldn't do because they wouldn't have fun.
What are some of the opportunities of a road trip that might not be features of other travel? And one thing that kind of comes to mind based on what you were just saying is like visiting small towns or being able to change your itinerary on the fly, all of those things.
Yeah, well, first of all, I want to go into the negatives first.
Okay.
There's a lot of monotony if you take a long solo road trip that you've got to be prepared for, okay? So that's a big negative. Some people just want excitement all the time, and they're not going to be happy if they have to do hours and hours of driving. So you have to prepare for that, and I'm going to go into how to deal with some of these negatives to where, you know, they're really not negative anymore. They're really... all of this monotony here again, it really, you do start dredging up and thinking of everything you forgot to do or say.
All my regrets come pouring back into my mind.
No, but that's not a bad thing. That's really not a bad thing. Then it definitely takes more time than most kind of travel. So if people are impatient or they don't want to do all this, it's much more timely. And they might not have the time. Traffic jams. Oh, my God. You know, none of us in this modern world can stand the traffic anymore. I mean, whenever we hit this, it's just like hitting that button. And you're going to experience that. If you take long road trips, unless you really plan when you're driving to avoid the high peak travel times, you're going to hit it, and you're going to invariably get caught up in some traffic jams that deal with accidents or road construction, that kind of thing. That's going to happen. You're going to have weather-related issues. You'll never know when, all of a sudden there's a complete downpour and you're flooded, so you can't drive for a day or two. You know, there are different things that weather can play that'll slow you down or affect the trip. Car problems. Now, you got to, before you leave, and I'm going to give you some tips, you have to make sure your car is in tip-top shape because being alone and having car problems, of which I've experienced, you have to be resilient. You have to be prepared. If you're prepared, then you can. You're not gonna just get all stressed out and get in panic mode or whatever. And then you've got these parking issues. You know, a lot of times you think it's gonna be easy to find a parking place, and it's really not. And it can also be very costly. So those are just the basic negatives. They're not really anything really bad, but they're different than, I would say, you know, a classic point A to point B destination where you're really not using a car at all. Now, on the positives, you know, I think that these types of trip with this, like I talked about, this distinct organic evolution, like going with the flow of the day, you know, there's so many opportunities or there's serendipitous things that come up. You'll see things, oh, well, I want to go to those gardens, like Bellingraph Gardens or whatever. You would never go to Bellingraph Gardens. It's between Mississippi and Alabama, I think. But they're beautiful. But if you're not in the car, on the interstate, on the road, and if you're on a road trip and you don't have any real timelines and you love gardens, you have the opportunity to do that. And you can stay as long as you want. If for the in the first 15 minutes you don't like it, get back in the car. But if you love it, you can stay there for several hours. Take great photographs, and it will be something that it's a wonderful aspect of travel. And really, that's how, I mean, that's how I grew up traveling. There was no, I mean, I flew some when I was young, but that's when aviation was just getting really started for the masses. So a lot of our trips were road trips, and I loved those because they were just so much fun because just of what I'm talking about. We would stop here. We would, you know, try out this weird snowball or whatever, you know. So that's great. And then, you know, they're landscapes that you get to see, the rolling hills, the mountains, the lakes, the sunsets, all of the woods and different types of greenery and deserts and everything. If you're not in the car seeing all this, I mean, you'll see it from overhead, but it's nothing like being in it and then going through it. It's wonderful. It just makes you understand the world we live in more and you know, where you're from more. And I think all of this plays into just really getting a better appreciation of life. And this type of travel, you know, does that. I mean, you'll see all the different microcultures, and you'll see different architecture and everything. And you can do this when you're taking extended road trips. In fact, I took one several years ago. I went from Miami to Maine. This is something I had always wanted to go up the East Coast. Now, I had been to Charleston, I had been to Savannah, and I had been to Miami. But I wanted to go to St. Augustine, Florida. I wanted to go to Jekyll Island. I wanted to go to the Hamptons. I wanted to go to Cape Cod, Newport, all these places that I had read about and fantasized about for, you know, some kind of historic or cultural thing. So I decided, you know, I'm retired now. My husband does not like to drive. He really won't do any of this. But I told him, I said, I really want to do this. And so he said, okay. He said, you know, just so I know your itinerary and you call me, you know, at least once a day, and I know you've gotten to where you're supposed to go. So I decided to do this. And it was just the most wonderful trip. I don't think I've ever taken a trip that I've liked any more than this, because what I got to do is I got to see the cultures change from Miami. Mm. I went, this is what I did. Miami, Palm Beach, St. Augustine, Jekyll Island, Savannah, Charleston. Then I skipped North Carolina because I've done a lot in North Carolina and D.C. and Maryland and that area. And I went all the way to the Hamptons. And I had always wanted to go to the Hamptons. And I spent over a week there, stayed in a great bed and breakfast that was owned by a former butler. So we had butler service. I mean, wow. It was wonderful. Then I went to Cape Cod, Newport, Salem, Portsmouth, and Kennebunkport. So I got to see the cultures change. I got to see the landscapes change. I got to eat the different types of food, and I took food tours in different places, the interior, historic interiors, the architecture change, the way people dressed. I mean, you could distinctively see how even the look of the people from Miami versus Charleston versus the Hamptons versus, Maine. I mean, you could see it all evolve, and it was wonderful. And after I came back, after I, got home, I just thought, America is awesome. I mean, it is awesome. All of these little microcultures that, people value and their traditions and everything, and it's the only way that you will be able to appreciate any of this because, like most every place that I had been on this trip, except for like Charleston and Savannah and Miami, I had flown into. So I'd been there several times. But all these other places, you really have to drive to them. And so that's my point. Most people are not going to fly to St. Augustine, Florida, and have a vacation there. And let me tell you, that is the most fun place. It's got great history. It has a kind of a Caribbean, New Orleans feel to it. Great boutique shops, lots of good restaurants, lots of different historic things.
I was going to say the history there is amazing.
The history is amazing. And I didn't realize that it was a time in that era where like the railroad ended there from north to south. And they had people like Flagler, big, developer, industrialist, and I want to say Ripley. I know that the Ripley, believe it or not, museum there. There was another gentleman. I'm sorry, I've forgotten it now. But it was an area where some very rich, eccentric people located, and they have all of these weird, weird things you can see there that I never knew. I mean, why would they be in St. Augustine? Well, they are. I mean, they have like three-legged chairs. Oh, I mean, when I tell you all these weird things, three-legged chairs aren't that weird. But there are a lot of things you would have never thought about that are there for you to see either in a museum or in some kind of a setting. Something's going on there metaphysically, but you can't put your finger on it. There were a lot of pirates in there, but that's not it. It's just a different place, but it's a great place to go to. And most people, I would say, in the United States, Americans and foreigners never get to go to St. Augustine, and it's delightful. And it's not that touristy. That's another thing. A lot of these places. Like Jekyll Island. Jekyll Island was another very, very secretive, posh place with the Firestones and the Morgans and the, the really fabulously wealthy industrialists came to go hunting in the winter. And it originally started, and you could only have a place there by invitation. And, I mean, it was super secretive to the point where that's where they concocted the Federal Reserve was there. But it has a beautiful old wooden hotel, Victorian hotel and clubhouse. And, you got croquet and kayaking. I mean, you can do anything there. And it has a very old kind of Victorian feel to the place, very secluded, deer walking around at night, have beautiful little shops to shop in, a bookstore that's wonderful, horseback riding. But you wouldn't go there unless you drove there. And it is a great place, not overrun by tourists, and very, very high quality. I mean, who can go see how J.P. Morgan lived? And they have his apartment in there. The whole thing was very interesting. And it's woven into a part of our history. I mean, I have this thing, and I haven't really totally come to the total bottom line of why the answer I'm trying to find, but it's amazing how certain things happen in certain places, and this is one of them. You know, why did all of these very wealthy people end up choosing this particular place, and really, which was kind of almost a swamp area, to be very refined in a kind of a hunting natural scenario and be very exclusive? It's kind of, here again, it's a mysterious draw that drew them into there. But they felt very safe there, and went on for a long time until, you know, other places evolved. Probably actually Newport took them over. I don't know why it lost its you know, pizzazz, but it did. So you know, all of these wonderful places, out of the way places, you know, you wouldn't go to unless you were in your car or on some kind of road trip, because you just wouldn't go there. And what's so great about most of them is they're not that touristy, because they're not overrun by tourists. So that makes it even more enjoyable. So it's these unique small towns. It's these unique places. And then also all the scenic things. You know, you've got like Sedona, the Grand Canyon. Those places are the most fantastic things visually. They're like earthscapes like you cannot believe. They're like on another planet. They're just unbelievably powerful and beautiful. And you do, I every time I've gone to those areas, I mean, I feel different when I'm in those environments. You know, you've got the Pacific Coast Highway, which I haven't done yet, but I want to do. I'm trying to plan for next year, San Diego to Seattle road trip. Wow. That's going to be my next one. My Miami to Maine was so much fun. I want to do the same thing on the West Coast and watch the cultures evolve, eat the different foods, you know, just kind of just see how it all changes from one locale to the other, and you know, experience all those different things that you can do. So that, you know, that I think is you can't see all of this or experience these small jewels if you're not on some type of road trip. You know, you just probably won't.
So, Astrid, do you have any tips about organizing a road trip that might be different than other trip organization?
Okay. Well, first of all, most of them are car-centered.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I mean, let me tell you something. You get your car serviced, get it cleaned. I mean, I know most people drive with a clean car. But clean, gassed up, ready to go. And, you know, making sure that you don't need to replace anything, that it is in tip-top shape. That is a must. Because if you're going to travel any distance itself, cars are not as hardy as they used to be. So you really have to get them just ready to do this. You know, unless you've got a real older, stronger, well-maintained Land Rover, I can tell you, it takes some wear and tear on your car. So get it in tip-top shape. Make sure, too, you've got a spare tire, and that your spare tire is a good
inflated,
spare.
Inflated, yeah.
Yeah, not one of these little things that can only get you 50 miles at the most. Get a good spare tire. A car emergency kit with, you know, with your flashers or your flares and your different things. They sell them, and you really should have it, you know, with a flashlight and everything, because you never know when you might have your SOS or your emergency service, which that's going to be my next thing I'll talk about, in place, but you are in the middle of nowhere before anybody can get to you. So there are things in the car emergency kit that you might be able to help you stabilize your situation. So get one of those. Make sure you get some kind of roadside assistance. If you're going solo in a car, you definitely need to do that, whether it's AAA or if you have something like OnStar in your car or whatever. That is an absolute must. 4, don't ever let your gas tank go under a third. I mean, that was one of the things that I so foolishly did every time. Because here again, I'd be thinking about this and that, and I would just not think about gas. And then it would get like under a 16th. And I mean, I'm like 20 miles to go. Oh, and boy. I mean, there was twice that I was literally on zero and I made it. I don't know how I made it. I really don't know how to make, but that is so foolish when you're by yourself. Because the biggest safety issues with driving solo is just being stranded out in the middle of nowhere and being vulnerable. So, you know, you want to have your gas tank always having gas. I mean, that I know that sounds, kind of nonsensical or too simple, but I guarantee you, you will forget about it.
Well, and there's a practical thing, too, is like when you're driving in unfamiliar territory, you don't necessarily know where the next gas station is, where, you know, you could get to a stretch where there's 50 miles where there's no gas station. That has happened to me before.
Yeah, yeah. Now, some of the newer logistics in the navigation systems,
they'll tell you. Yeah,
they'll tell you. And you need to pay attention to that. But just in general, don't let it get below a third. You know, just don't. And then when you're filling up, make sure you lock your valuables in your car, especially hide your electronics. You know, I mean, I never felt unsafe when I did my solo trip and any of my driving trips, but I'm also very careful. Then hide a spare key somewhere. I mean, some people have these little metal things that they put under where the wheel rim is, but I always like to carry a separate key in my purse or, you know, somewhere that's not per se in the car. But you know, if you lose your key, and it's going to be a day or two hassle, so you know, it's just a whole big hassle, so bring a spare key. Then activate and know how to use your navigation system. If you have a car that has one of those, and most all the new cars do, and lots of people have them now, really know how to use it. Because let me tell you what happened to me. I had a very nice Range Rover that I was in my trip, and I had never used a navigation system because I'm, you know, older, 66 no. years old, and I don't like technology that much. But I did know how to do Google Maps in my phone, so I mapped out everything, and I knew how I was going. And my daughter kept saying, Mama, you need to do this navigation. It's not that hard. And so after I went from Charleston to Long Island to the Hamptons, and I had to go through New Jersey, New York, and then go through all those little off-ramps and those bridges and everything getting to the Hamptons, and then finally getting there, and then finally finding my bed and breakfast in Southampton. It was a total miracle that I got there, because these off-ramps and these things, they would just come up on you, and if you didn't go, you missed it. And then if you missed it, oh, my God, it'll take you 45 minutes. I don't know how I did it. It was really a guardian angel that helped me do it. So I thought, I better learn how to do that navigation system. I can't go back through there and live through this. This is really hard driving, and I'm not familiar with it. So I called her, and she told me exactly. So I put in where I was going in Cape Cod. Well, I thought it was going to take me like past JFK or, you know, not too bad. And then you'd go and start going up east, northeast. Oh, my God. After about an hour, I was like in downtown Manhattan. And I said, what is this navigation system doing? I mean, it's going to take me, instead of 4 hours to get where I'm going, 24 hours, and I'm in the middle of Manhattan. So this was like on Labor Day weekend or some Memorial Day or something. So I called my OnStar, you know, and talked to him. I said, look, I'm in the middle of, and I want to know how to do this, blah, blah, blah. And the lady says, well, we're just OnStar. We don't know how to tell you how to do it. And so what are you talking about? I'm stranded. I'm stranded in the middle of Manhattan. I said, and I don't want to have to spend the night here. And I was going on and on. I said, this is what I have OnStar is to help me with any kind of emergency. She said, well, that's not what we do. We call people to help. And everybody, it was like Sunday, and all the dealerships or anybody's closed. And so she couldn't help me. I mean, I was just like so mad. You cannot believe it. And I don't get mad, but I was so mad that, I mean, let me tell you something. I was like, woo. So then I decided to call the woman who sold me this Range Rover and tell me how to put this navigation, because really I was at that point, I thought, well, how am I going to get out of Manhattan and all of that and get back? Oh, it was awful. So I got her on the phone Sunday afternoon. She knew how mad I was, and she was worried I'd never talk to her, much less buy another car again. So she didn't really know, and we finally figured out the problem was I was on back roads instead of like interstate. Oh. So make sure that your navigation is set not on all the little bitty. I mean, it would have taken me, oh God, all through Manhattan, all around the whole island before it let me get off. Oh my God, that was horrible. So know how to use your navigation system. But once I got it on that, I was sailing everywhere I went. It was fabulous. I didn't even need Google Maps anymore, nothing. But that brings me to the next one. You need to have a good set of just paper maps, because it, you know, as much as you can see it on your navigation system, you know where you're going. I like to still see it on paper. And like the National Geographic maps are really good. They have a lot of information on things you can do and blah, blah, blah. So get that as backup in the event that
your system fails you.
All your technology.
Conks out, yeah.
Okay. Then when you're tired, stop. Don't push yourself. Because I can tell you, if you take long road trips and the monotony of everything, and you start speeding, and when you do that, you're not really paying attention, and you're more likely to, your senses aren't as focused as they need to be, something can happen. So if you feel yourself, stop. Go to Starbucks. I mean, Starbucks, I love stopping at Starbucks. Or if you have to, just pull over on the side of the road. Now, don't pull over and sleep or take a nap in the rest areas, because they are not what I consider the safest places in the world. And they really actually, a lot of places are against the law to sleep there. So, I mean, if you're really tired, I mean, first of all, stop and get yourself a cup of coffee or a Coke or whatever that'll kind of pep you back up. But walk around, because that's some of it. If you sit so long, you know, it just makes it worse. So when you're tired, stop. Even if it means you have to stop every half an hour. Like on my way back, it was a very long trip and I had to spend the night halfway. I stopped at the very end. I was stopping like every 30 to 35 minutes because I wanted to make it home. I didn't want to be you know,
exhausted.
No. Yeah. So I did. And that gave me just enough refresh to make it to the next stop. Then try and avoid nighttime driving. Don't do that. That is when you're solo, driver or on a solo road trip, especially if you're female and you don't have a pet with you. even if you have a pet with you. Driving at night, everything bad can start happening at night, I think. So what I always do is I get up really early in the morning, crack of dawn, right before sunrise, and that's when I start. And then I usually stop right after sunrise. So that's really, and lots of people say no more than 12 hours a day, ever. Oh. Ever. Yeah, but some people will go, they'll push it to 20. So no more than 12 hours a day. And the statistics say, the stuff I've read about road trips, that most people who do them a lot don't drive more than 4 or 5 hours a day. And then they stop and they just enjoy the end of the day and that kind of thing. So, you know, don't drive at night. It's just don't drive at night. Unless you can help it. And like what happened with me with going to the Hamptons, which I thought I would get there, I don't know, in about 10 hours or 12 hours. I thought I'd make it before it got real dark. Oh, I hit traffic jam after traffic jam, you know, going through New Jersey and all that. So, I you know, and then tolls and all these kinds of things that happened. So, I learned my lesson. So don't do it then. Then, that brings me to the tolls and what you need. Have small bills and quarters, lots of quarters, if you're going up the East Coast, because you're going to have, you know, bridges and tunnels and all this, and, you know, all these cars are going to be converging, and if you've never been in that particular through, you're going to get a little stressed out. Oh, where's my check? Just have it there. So just be ready. Then also pack comfort supplies in your car. Get a little cooler, a little Yeti, or whatever you want, you know, cold water. I like sweet tea, so I go to Whole Foods and stack up on sweet tea. Healthy snacks. I like the skinny popcorn. It's not super healthy, but I like skinny popcorn.
The snacks are like one of the absolute bonuses of a road trip.
Oh, yeah.
That's my favorite.
And the thing about it is, after, you know, a couple of stops, you got to clean everything out. And that's another thing. Keep your car clean, because if it gets to be a pig stop, and it can easily get that way, it's not as much fun. So, and in fruit, if you like fruit. Have your camera ready, because really on every road trip, if you like to take pictures, you're going to see all kinds of things you want to pull over and take shots of. So have your camera ready. Phone chargers, because if, you know, your SOS doesn't work, you want to make sure you can call for help. And, you know, you just want your phone is your real safety net. So you want to have that phone charger in the event, you know, you forgot to charge it up the night before or whatever. If you need glasses, extra reading glasses. And also some tissues, because you never know when you have to stop to use the bathroom. And it's not the greatest bathroom on the road. And they don't have any toilet paper. And that is quite unpleasant if you can't have any toilet paper. So just think before you leave, just, you know, put a pack or two of Kleenexes in your purse or, you know, in your cars, and just bring them in when you go, just in case there's some, you know, you don't have any. So those are just basics, but it's kind of common sense. But, you know, plan for it. Then things to fight the monotony. The monotony is probably the biggest negative. If you're going to do a lot of driving, especially when they're long stretches of nothing, and a lot of people don't like to drive. Like I said, my husband hates to drive. He won't go anywhere it takes anyway. He won't even hardly go to the grocery store anymore if he thinks there's going to be traffic. So to break the monotony up, you know, that's great. Now you can do audio books. You can do podcasts. Mm-hmm. You can Sirius radio. Like, I know what I did is, well, as a child, when I grew up, my father loved Frank Sinatra. So we had this ritual in our home. He didn't wake us up every morning. We didn't wake up by alarm clock. We woke up by him turning on Frank Sinatra singing something. Oh. So we my sister and I knew every Frank Sinatra song in the world because we grew up with Frank Sinatra. So on this trip, I decided that, well, you know, here again, you start thinking and you start thinking about my father and, he was my soulmate. So I turned on Sinatra. Well, I ended up on this 6-week road trip listening to Sinatra almost the whole way. And it was beautiful. I learned so much about the American Songbook and all the writers and the stories behind the songs. I mean, you know, I'd known the songs, but I didn't have all of this other information. And that being on the road and having that music was just, it just was so, it made the trip even more special because it was like my father was in the car with me. And he would have loved to have done what I was doing because he always, when he took us on trips, he'd stop anywhere we would want to stop. I mean, if it was Wacky Wacky, you know, synchronized swimming show, he would do it. I mean, I came up with everything. He always said yes. I rarely was told no. He was a special person. But so the radio is fabulous now. And then, you know, you've got all Pandora and all, you know, lots of people program their own music, etc. So there are a lot of things that you can do that will break the monotony. And plan for it, you know, because that will help a lot. It will, you know, it will take the frustration and the discomfort after long stretches, and it'll make you stay more focused. So, okay, then the next thing is wear comfortable clothes and shoes. And you might start out, you know, being a little bit more dressed up, but I guarantee you at the end of the trip, you're going to be in flip-flops, I mean, almost your pajamas, because you'll want to be so comfortable. And it doesn't matter, you know, it just really doesn't. When you're on a road trip, there is something about just kind of, I don't want to say it's a step up from getting out of your bed, but you get real comfortable. But you need to wear comfortable clothes because sitting a lot and all of that, you know, I guess your stomach will expand, but you feel like you're just blobbing out. So you want to have a lot of room for that. Okay. Then, of course, communicate last with your loved ones often because they're going to worry about you. You know, unfortunately, especially in the United States, we used to be a real safe country. Now we're not so safe anymore, and you never know what's going to happen. So you need to call them in the morning, text them during the day, let them know where you are. When you get wherever you are that night, that you're okay, that they know that you've survived that leg of the road trip, you know, and then have your emergency numbers and anything, you know, that you would need in terms of communication, you know, if anything happened. So those are really my tips. I mean, you know, of course you've got to research, you've got to know what you want to do, where you want to go, you know, typical trip types of things that you would do, but these are specific or my specifics for the road trip. So I'll wrap the show up basically with a title to a song. I love Rascal Flatts. I think he's a great young country singer, and he one of his first hits was called "Life Is a Highway." And it's the main line of the song is "Life is a highway, I want to ride it all night long." And really, if you want to rejuvenate, recharge, and renew yourself, a solo road trip really is a fabulous type of trip to do just that.
Even a road trip requires packing. Now, you might not find the Yeti cooler on this packing list, but you can make all the other parts of your packing easier with Astrid's handy packing list. You can get your own copy of Astrid's complimentary packing list. Just go to astridtravel.com, download the packing list. It's right there on the front page. You can subscribe to this podcast on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, SoundCloud. You can hear us on iHeartRadio, TuneIn, and really find us any of the finer places that podcasts can be found. If you like what you're hearing, and how could you not? We ask you to give us a rating, a review on any of those platforms. It's going to help other solo travelers find this podcast. Thank you so much for listening. We'll see you on the road on the next episode of Solo Travel Talk.
Thank you for listening to Solo Travel Talk. Follow Astrid on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. To learn more about Astrid or solo travel advisors, visit our website, astridtravel.com.